Picture a dusty California valley in 1937, where two men walk single file down a path worn into the earth by countless desperate footsteps. One moves with quick, sharp gestures. The other lumbers behind like a loyal bear, mimicking his companion's every movement. They carry everything they own in rolled blankets slung over their shoulders. What makes them different from thousands of other Depression-era drifters isn't what they carry, it's that they travel together at all. In a world where loneliness has become the default human condition, George and Lenny possess something rare, each other. Their story, compressed into three fateful days, reveals both the transcendent power of human connection and the brutal forces that destroy it. Lenny Small embodies a tragic contradiction, a massive man with a childlike mind who loves soft things, mice, puppies, velvet. Yet his inability to gauge his strength turns gentle impulses into disaster. When he pets a mouse, it dies in his hands. When a puppy nips him, his reflexive slap crushes its skull. This isn't cruelty. It's the devastating gap between intention and capability. George Milton, small and quick-witted, has become Lenny's guardian in a world without safety nets. Their relationship blends brotherhood and parenthood, with George constantly coaching Lenny. Don't speak around the boss. Don't touch what isn't yours. Remember where to hide if trouble starts. God almighty, if I was alone, I could live so easy, George sometimes vents. Yet these outbursts mask a deeper truth. George needs Lenny as much as Lenny needs him. Without his companion, George would become another lonely drifter, spending wages on whiskey and prostitutes. Their friendship defies the ranch's suspicious culture, where loyalty is so rare, it's unrecognizable.
Tell me about the rabbits, George.
This repeated request becomes their shared liturgy, a vision they recite for comfort. George describes their future farm, a few acres with vegetables, fruit trees, chickens, and rabbits for Lenny to tend. They'll live off the fat of the land, answering to no boss. The dream gains unexpected momentum when Candy, the aging swamper, overhears and offers his life savings, $300. Fantasy crystallizes into possibility. Even Crooks, the black stable hand segregated in his own room, briefly imagines joining them. His quick retreat when Curly's wife reminds him of his vulnerable position shows how thoroughly society has conditioned him to expect disappointment. What makes their vision powerful isn't its grandeur. They don't dream of wealth or luxury. They dream of autonomy, dignity, and permanence. In an era when workers are interchangeable parts, they imagine being their own masters. The dream provides psychological sustenance that makes their harsh present bearable. The ranch mirrors America's hierarchies. Crooks, named for his crooked spine, lives alone in the harness room, barred from the bunkhouse by his skin color. "A guy goes nuts if he ain't got nobody," he tells Lenny. His room, filled with books and possessions, represents both pride and prison. When Lenny visits, Crooks initially torments him by suggesting George might not return, revealing how isolation has twisted him, before softening, desperate for connection. Curly's wife, never granted a name, drifts through the ranch seeking attention from men who fear her as both temptation and trap. "I could have been in the movies," she confides, revealing dreams as vivid as George and Lenny's farm. Her flirtatiousness masks crushing loneliness in a loveless marriage. She's not a villain, but another victim of thwarted dreams. Candy fears obsolescence. After letting Carlson shoot his ancient dog, he recognizes his own future. "They'll can me pretty soon." The dog's death foreshadows the story's climax. Mercy and murder can look identical. Most damning is how these outcasts turn on each other. When Crooks dares dream of joining the farm, Curly's wife crushes him. "I could get you strung up on a tree so easy it ain't even funny." The ranch's hierarchy teaches everyone to protect small advantages rather than challenge the system itself. Violence saturates the ranch. Curly, compensating for his small stature, targets Lenny, whose size threatens his masculine identity.
When Lenny smiles thinking about their farm, Curly attacks, only to have his hand crushed, revealing the terrifying gap between Lenny's strength and control. This pattern has haunted Lenny before. In Weed, he touched a girl's red dress to feel the soft fabric. When she screamed, panic made him grip tighter, creating the appearance of assault. They fled a lynch mob, establishing the template that repeats with fatal consequences. When Curly's wife lets Lenny stroke her hair in the barn, catastrophe strikes. As she panics and screams, Lenny, terrified of George's anger, shakes her to silence, breaking her neck. His genuine distress afterward can't resurrect the dead. The ranch erupts in vengeful fury. Curly vows to shoot the guts out of that big bastard. Candy's grief focuses not on the dead woman, but their destroyed dream. Even a woman's death registers primarily as obstacle to their plans. George faces an impossible choice: let Curly's mob torture Lenny, or act himself. The decision echoes Candy's regret about his dog. "I ought to have shot that dog myself." Taking responsibility for ending a loved one's life provides dignity that strangers cannot. George finds Lenny at their predetermined meeting spot by the river. As Lenny gazes across the water, George recites their farm vision one final time, then shoots him in the back of the head. The men arrive to find George beside Lenny's body. Carlson and Curly see only that the dangerous man is dead. Only Slim understands. "You hadda, George. I swear you hadda." As they walk away, Carlson asks, "Now what the hell you suppose is eating them two guys?" His incomprehension reveals the gulf between those who've loved deeply and those who haven't. George's mercy destroys him as surely as it saves Lenny. Without his companion, he loses both purpose and dream. He'll continue working ranches, saving wages for nothing, eventually spending them on whiskey and prostitutes like every other lonely drifter. He's traded Lenny's life for Lenny's dignity, and the cost is his own future happiness. Steinbeck distills fundamental human experiences into their purest form. We recognize George's protective frustration, Lenny's innocent destructiveness, Candy's fear of obsolescence, Crook's defensive isolation, and Curly's wife's crushing loneliness, struggles that transcend the Depression era. The story challenges American mythology while acknowledging its psychological necessity. The dream of land ownership forms the foundation of American identity, yet Steinbeck suggests it functions more as sustaining illusion than achievable reality. "I've seen hundreds of men come by on the road, and never a goddamn one of them ever gets it. Still, we need our dreams to survive, even knowing they may never materialize." George and Lenny's story endures through its universality. Every genuine friendship contains their elements: mutual dependence, protective care, shared vision, occasional frustration. Their tragedy reminds us that what we love most makes us most vulnerable. Deep connection exposes us to profound pain, yet the alternative, Carlson's isolation, Crook's loneliness, Curly's wife's desperate attention-seeking, appears far worse. The story's final image stays with us: George walking away with Slim while others stand bewildered, unable to comprehend his grief. Our most profound moments remain incomprehensible to those who haven't experienced similar depth of connection. We're left with questions Steinbeck poses but doesn't answer. What do we owe those who depend on us? When does love require impossible choices? Of Mice and Men reminds us that our most important decisions rarely come with clear right answers, only the courage to act when we must, knowing we'll carry the consequences forever.